grab your bat microphone, it's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate, it's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Bat Pod.
Welcome to the Bat Pod, Episode 3. My name is Bill Beer, and joining me as always, Joey Galvez.
Hey, how you doing today, Bill?
I'm doing great.
All right. So you're back from doing your little stint with the GCPD, huh?
Yeah, I did a little stint. I wasn't here for last episode, but I'm back now and excited to be back. We got some good stuff to talk about tonight. I'm very excited. We got a little Batman number 56. We got Nightwing 50, which is sort of a game changer.
It's a big one.
And Detective Comics number 989. We're going to have a little character spotlight, which I'm really excited about. And we have Stump the co-host. And topic of the week, which you're really going to enjoy.
This week's topic of the week is going to be really awesome because we took it to Twitter and everybody came back and gave us some feedback. They all wanted to hear our favorite animated television show, series, or movie, or film, or whatever you wanted. Is anything that was animated that had to do with Batman. Each of us are going to have three of our favorite.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty fun. Very fun. And Nate Campbell will join us for that one, Batman Jones. Let's get to the books.
The Batpod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show.
We're proud to be a member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
So our first book is Batman number 56. Your writer is Tom King. Tony S. Daniel does the pencils. Clayton Cowles, letterer. Your variant cover is by Francisco Montina. Your associate editor is Brittany Holzner. Your editor is Jamie S. Rich. And of course, as always, Batman was created by Bob Kane with Bill Finger. Gotta have Bill Finger in there. So this issue, after last issue's cliffhanger, Batman starts his search for the KG Beast. He fights some ninjas with a bronze tiger and defeats a new god, Kanto, with a little bit of mind games. And we end up with Batman right outside the KG Beast door for hopefully a classic showdown next issue. What did you think?
I liked it. It was a whole lot of fun. I really liked those callbacks to those characters as well. I liked this whole interaction between KG Beast and his father. It was a pretty good one. I liked it a whole lot.
It says a lot about KG Beast's character when you see his father and how messed up he is.
Right, right.
I read Nightwing first. Maybe I shouldn't have done that. But we had an idea. We had an idea where this was going. But this pretty much happens, you know, I don't know how far after the last issue, but it's... not far last issue, because it doesn't really imply something, you know, you don't know what has happened to Dick, really. They don't mention his injuries. Alfred brings it up briefly. But you don't know, you know, Dick is in peril at the moment. That's all you really know.
Yeah, this one, I liked it because you got Batman and he's going and doing what he does best, right? He goes and he's a detective at heart. So he goes and gathers up all the clues. And you see that throughout this entire book. I loved it. He goes and talks to people, and he gets the information out of them. The old Batman way, right? He goes and wrings some necks.
There's that one scene that's right at the beginning, you know. Mm-hmm. Batman is in Tommy Gunn's shot, and he's just looking. And he basically says to the guy, he says, run. The guy, he dives out the window.
Oh yeah.
he's either running or is tossed out the window. You can't really tell.
Yeah, because that's the first time you see him. He jumps, he just comes flying right through that window, and all you see is a dark space where that hole is and two eyes glaring right back at you, which is, I mean, if you're a criminal, Batman's already pretty creepy, right? He's already like, he's somebody you run from as soon as you know he's around. So looking back on that panel and seeing just those two white slits for where eyes should be, that's even creepier. I loved that panel.
Yeah, that was pretty good. You know, Batman and the Bronze Tiger is fighting ninjas. What's better than that? Seriously.
Right? Batman fighting some ninjas. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's so cool. You don't know where they came from. You don't know who they are. You don't know anything about them, but it doesn't matter.
Right. It just works. I love this. When I saw this, I was like, dude, this is so awesome. I want to see Batman fighting some ninjas, man, because isn't that how Batman trained? He trained as a ninja, or essentially, right? That's one of those things that he sought out any kind of martial arts,
right?
And that's how he trained. So I love seeing this. This is awesome.
And the Bronze Tiger, he actually mentions, you know, that's a lot of ninjas. That's an excessive amount of ninjas,
right? And Bronze Tiger himself, he's actually a trained martial artist as well. So this is really, really cool to see them both kind of fighting together against ninjas. So awesome.
No, the Bronze Tiger, he showed up in Batman Rebirth, you know, when Batman was forming his own Suicide Squad.
Uh-huh.
When they went to retrieve the Psycho Pirate from Bane.
Right.
And then he shows up in the arc. He is helping Batman in the I Am Bane arc. But, you know, he's old school John Ostrander Suicide Squad. He was in that series a lot. So he's sort of an, from what I'm taking now, he's sort of an anti-villain, not sort of like what Catwoman is. I mean, I think he started out as a villain.
So what's cool about this is when I was reading this book, again, you know me, when I see some characters that are brought in here, I have to do my homework. So I did a little homework on the Bronze Tiger. He was created by Dennis O'Neill and Jim Barry and Leopoldo, and I'm going to ruin this guy's name, Leopoldo Duranona. Sorry. Anyway, he was affiliated with the Suicide Squad. He was also in the League of Assassins. Who else do we know that was in the League of Assassins? Batman was trained by Ra's al Ghul. Bronze Tiger first appeared in The Dragon's Fist in a novel by Dennis O'Neill and Jim Barry, which starred Richard Dragon. So he was actually in, he wasn't in the DC universe first. He was in a book, in a novel. In his first DC appearance, he was in Richard Dragon, the Kung Fu Fighter. Pretty cool. He was also in some...
That's cool.
He was also in some TV and films. He was in Brave and the Bold, Arrow, the Arrowverse. I don't know if you've seen that. First couple of seasons there, he showed up there. And he was in Justice League Gods and Monsters. Pretty cool. He even shows up in some video games. He's pretty well known around DC Universe. It's pretty cool.
That is cool. That is cool. I like to see characters like that.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. He shows up in Lego Batman. And I guess there's going to be a new Lego Batman super villains coming out pretty soon. He's going to show up in that too. So that's kind of cool.
That is pretty cool. So the other scene that I really enjoyed in here is when Batman's hanging upside down. You know, the new god Kanto is in there. And he thinks he's getting ready to torture Batman, you know. He thinks that I'm going to torture him till I kill him, and Batman really does a mental mumbo-jumbo on him, basically.
Right, right.
And I know you don't know too much about the New Gods characters when we were talking about it, but I love the New Gods. I've been reading about them for 30 years, so.
But, you know, I did my homework on Kanto as well because we were talking about it. We were talking about, you know, hey, I haven't really gotten into the New Gods very much. So he is created by Jack Kirby. He was affiliated with Darkseid's Elite. His first appearance was in Mr. Miracle, Volume 1, Number 7. I don't know if you know this, but he was actually allegedly modeled after the Renaissance nobleman, Caesar Borgia. But his appearance was patterned after Errol Flynn in a film still. Did you know that about him?
Oh, I didn't know that, but it makes sense by the way he looks, you know?
That's where Jack Kirby got the idea. And he shows up in various TV and TV shows and things of that nature, which is pretty cool. He shows up a lot in a whole handful of animated shows there. And he also shows up in video games as well. He's going to be showing up in the DC Supervillains, Lego Supervillains game as well. This is actually kind of cool. I like that they're bringing back these old school characters in these video games. Pretty awesome.
That's awesome. Yeah, that is cool. That is cool. And, you know, as I was saying with this particular scene, Batman kind of scares him with, you know, saying Granny Goodness has been looking for him and he's hiding out here on Earth. And mm-hmm. he sort of has a fear in him. You know, you see that panel where his eyes are real big.
Right, right.
And then he's like, you're bluffing. So at the very end, he was going to let Batman go because, you know, he thinks he's defeated because, you know, Granny Goodness and such coming to get him or something like that. But Batman just takes him out with a headbutt. Bang.
I mean, you can't ever keep Batman cuffed, right?
No.
He's a stinking ninja, dude. He's going to get out of that stuff real quick.
Well, and he has a plan for everything, you know?
Right. Yeah, he's always got a contingency plan.
A plan to get out of everything.
So he gets out and he just knocks him out and he's left on the floor. And I love this next page here where you see the reaction between KG Beast and his father. Man, there's some background there, right? You can definitely tell why KG Beast is who he is. Because his dad is just a deadbeat, right? His dad's a drunkard and he used to beat KG Beast and his mother and all this stuff. This guy's life is a mess.
Well, KG Beast, you know, is pretty messed up too because it sounds like he killed his siblings and his mother.
Oh, right. Yeah, you got to be a psychopath, man.
Yeah. And then his father, who's half crippled, you know.
Uh-huh.
He forces him to drink alcohol, and he hasn't drank alcohol in years.
Right.
He said he's been sober for who knows how long.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's just, and I knew, did you kind of get this idea when you first seen him, you knew exactly what KG Beast was there for?
I thought that was going to be the case. I don't know what the reasoning is behind it. I don't know if he... You know, he finally got Batman, as he was saying, Batman took his arm.
Right, right.
And he took Batman's son, so he sort of got his revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess he was there to take care of the last remaining piece that's hanging on from his past, I guess.
So all throughout this book, every time Batman would go and question somebody, he was always asking, you have this tie to KG Beast. Where is he? You know how to get a hold of him. And throughout this book, they keep saying, you know, he's killed everybody who can connect him to his whereabouts. So that's kind of the case here. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, he's at his dad's place because his dad is that last thread, that last remaining hanging thread there that Batman can pull on and everything can tumble on top of KG Beast here. So that's that last thread that he need to go clip. And I think that's where I, at that moment, I was like, he's there to kill his dad. And we do see him, he pulls out a gun and that's what he does. But I love this whole interaction here. Yeah, like you said, it was
great. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the other thing, Batman is on the trail and you see him just tromping through the snow in that one two-page spread.
Right.
But you have all the conversations that he's going through to try to search and doing his detective work to try to figure out where the KG Beast is. And that was kind of cool that they pieced it together. That's a different kind of storytelling that I don't recall seeing a lot. But it kind of fills in the blanks a little bit.
Right.
You know, sometimes you get a lot of story between the panels. Well, you have a panel here, and it doesn't necessarily have him doing the detective work, but the detective work is in the words.
Yeah, and it's kind of going on in your mind's eye. I loved that. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I really appreciated that. I really liked that.
Yeah.
Alfred had mentioned, you know, he's... two bat planes on his way there.
He's
how many
dedicated,
bat planes
right?
does he have? And who's making these bat planes?
Right? Bat I mean, mobiles. Come on, we've seen how many Batmobiles he had in the last issue, right?
Yeah, I guess he has plenty.
Yeah, and they kind of show up here in this issue too a little bit. But yeah, I saw that. And then he even says that there's moments where he's talking to Alfred and Alfred is kind of cutting in and out. And he's like, I'm losing communication with you. You can't go further. The people that the locals there say you can't reach this place on foot. And that's what Batman's doing. Batman is reaching this place on foot. And man, that shows how determined he is to get this guy, right? I mean, come on. I would be just as determined as Batman is to get this guy if somebody had turned around and done this to my son. I don't know how you would feel if somebody did this to your kids, dude, but I know,
you would be just as determined as he is. Maybe right. More so.
Right.
You know, because he has a code, but, you know, once he walks in that cabin door, right. Is there a code anymore?
Right.
Because they're in the middle of nowhere. And is that code out the window?
I know. Hey, for me, man, somebody did this to my kid, the code would be out the window the moment that bullet flew right out of that gun.
Oh, yeah. But you know, Batman with his code, his goal is to take him back to Arkham.
You think so?
That's his goal. Oh, yeah, I think. Why break your code now? I mean, yeah.
Would anybody know, though?
We talked about that last week a little bit. But yeah, I think his goal is to take him down. Now, it's going to be rough, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, you're out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody's going to know if you break your code. Come on, break the code.
No, but he'll know. He'll know.
Right. That's Batman. He'll know.
The other thing I wanted to mention about this book is the artwork.
Oh, man.
And I really enjoyed the artwork. There was one scene that felt out of place for me.
Okay, which one was that?
It's a scene at the beginning where you see his face close up, and he says, run. That was very odd looking to me. It almost didn't look Tony Daniel-ish. I liked it, but the way his face is, you know, not the cow. The cow looks awesome, but his face looks a little bit different.
Oh,
it didn't feel
does.
Like it matched. You think it does?
Yeah, I see what you're saying there. I didn't catch that till now, just now as you mentioned it.
But yeah, it looked a little off. It didn't bother me all that much, but I looked and said, Tony Daniel? but the thing that I loved, the art that I loved in this book was when he's chomping through the snow and that cape is whipping in the wind.
Oh, yeah.
You see how that cape is. That was totally awesome.
That is so
that.
Cool. That's what I was going to ask you about, if you liked those panels where he's walking through the snow. I thought it was cool. I thought that one where it shows, you know, how where he's been walking in the snow there. You know how when people draw like Dick Grayson flipping through the air and it's kind of like it's kind of transparent a little bit? That's the same thing we see here with Batman walking through the snow. And I love that device. I don't know if that's something that you liked. They did it a whole lot in Grayson. I know that much.
Okay. That's cool. I didn't read too much of Grayson, I have to admit, so.
Yeah, that Grayson was one of my favorite ones. It was pretty cool. I've actually got, I'm only missing like one out of that whole entire run.
That's cool. But no, I enjoyed this one. I'm looking forward to the confrontation next issue, so.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be a fight, man. It's going to be so cool.
Yeah, that's for sure.
All right, man. This was a really cool book. I really love the artwork. The storyline was cool. I love how Batman just went back to his basics. You know, he was back to detecting and going and figuring out the clues and talking to all those people just to get to his guy. And he was chomping through that snow, man. That was really cool. That is Batman, right? And a book with Batman fighting ninjas, you know, I'm in. So I loved it. That was pretty cool. So we'll just go ahead and move on to, what is it, topic of the week?
If you want more of the Batpod, head on over to thebatpod.com.
In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman,
welcome to Topic of the Week. We're bringing in Nate Campbell, aka Batman Jones, and we got Joey here. And our topic of the week is your favorite Batman animated appearance, whether it's a TV show, whether it's an animated movie, whatever it may be. We all came up with our top three. And maybe we'll start with the, you know, the third place and go around and to second to first. Okay, Joey, you want to go first?
Okay, sure, I'll go first. So I had some really cool ones, guys, and I actually did some research. I was actually watching a bunch of animated appearances this weekend, and I came up with some really cool ones. And I was telling Bill, I was like, you know, I've got a top three, but I'm probably going to mention like two or three more, just saying, because there's so many. I had to really, really narrow it down. And my top two are probably because it's more nostalgic for me, because I was watching it when I was growing up as a kid. And the third one is probably because how awesome the artwork is and the writing. And it was just really, really cool. My number three is Gotham Knight. And it's that anthology one where they had all those, you know, it's kind of like the Animatrix where it had all those many different stories. I loved it because the artwork was awesome. The storylines were great. I think my favorite one was, you know, when Batman was crawling through the sewers.
A part of me hates you because that was considered in one of my top three as well. Very much so.
Me and you are probably going to have the same three.
Yeah, no, but that's cool. That gives me flexibility because, again, we had a couple of them. So I'm leaning towards something else. But I definitely agree with you with that being one of the best representations. And I'm not sure if you know this, but that anime actually served as like a Batman Begins 1.5, like a bridge.
Right, yeah.
Yeah,
kind
of. That's what I remember. I remember that. And that was one of the first, you know, those DC direct-to-DVD movies.
Yeah,
that's one of the ones that started it all, I believe. I don't know if it was the first one or not, but I do remember that was Batman Begins. It was related to that movie, and that's one of the reasons I sought it out, because I enjoyed that movie so much.
Yeah, it was a fun one. I loved all those different stories. All those stories were so cool.
Definitely.
Yep.
Okay, I guess since Bill's a man, I'm going to go up next, and I'll put out there, and I know you two are going to hate me for this, but again, Lego Batman. You're literally taking 1960s campy style, mashing it with Brave and the Bold, updating it for a new generation, and it references every Batman movie that ever existed. There's no way. Hands down, one of the greatest animated sequences of Batman. I think it encapsulates the character. Again, it's more campy. So if you like Brave and the Bold or, you know, things like that, it's definitely a good portrayal of the essence of what Batman is.
Yeah, I liked it. Me and my son watch it quite a bit. And one of my favorite scenes there is when he's sitting in his little boat there, and he's like, he's finally realizing that he has nobody because of the way he is. And I loved that. I love that device. That was pretty cool.
I think that's what captures the essence of Batman when I say it. And you stated it a very good way, is that like his loneliness is just kicked up to, you know, notch 10 when you watch that movie. So again, it's definitely on my top three.
Well, getting to, you know, Lego Batman, I haven't really seen it, so I really can't say too much about it. But I guess I gotta watch it now.
Oh my God.
Well, you don't have little ones, so I'd probably laugh at you if you didn't have little ones. I mean, Nate, do you got little ones at home?
Not at all. Laugh at me all you want. It was way better than Batman v Superman. You can't deny me that.
Well, I've got little ones at home, so that's the reason why I watched it.
Okay, my number three. This might date me a little bit. It just might. It just might give a clue to my age. But my number three is...
Drum roll.
Scooby-Doo.
What?
Scooby-Doo.
Seen that again?
Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Came out, what, in the 60s? And the show that came on after that was called The New Scooby-Doo Movies.
Oh,
and they
man.
Had all these guest stars. And Batman and Robin would be a guest star on that.
I think I remember.
And I loved
that.
It. Yeah, I loved it when they showed up. But they had some, you know, pretty unique guest stars. The Addams Family was one of them.
Uh-huh.
Genie was one of them. Batman and Robin. I loved it. It was very corny and very, you know, 70s. But that is my number three, and I'm sure it's not even close to anybody else's.
And you were in your 30s around that time, too, right?
No.
Well, just, if it helps, just I think they played it on like Nick or Nick at Night or something when I was a kid. So
okay,
yeah,
okay.
Like that's 20 funny. Years after that's it funny. Came out,
right? Oh man!
Wow.
For number two, I've got one that's probably going to date me. It was Batman Beyond. That was so
yeah, that's
cool.
Awesome. Like, that was another one that was on my list.
I told you, dude. And my number one's probably going to be your number one as well. I know that much for sure, probably. So, but Batman Beyond was so cool because you got old school, old man Bruce Wayne training the new school Batman coming in, Terry McGinnis, and you've got, like this neo punk rock type of new age, music going on. And it's just, it was so cool. I liked it a whole lot. It was one of my favorite ones. And I liked the fact that Batman had a full mask. That was so cool.
I loved it.
It was almost like they went a Spider-Man route with the Batman mythos. With Terry being in college and everything, but Bruce Wayne still being around to kind of guide it. I would have loved to see a series with Bruce Wayne in that outfit.
That would be pretty cool.
That first episode might be one of the best first episodes of a TV series I've seen.
Yeah.
The way it sets everything up, it was fantastic. Now, I didn't see it when it came out. I saw it later.
Uh-huh.
But it's a great series. Great series, I have to agree.
Yeah, it's got some really cool concepts, man. It's got people who like splice their DNA with like crazy characters, and like it's pretty cool, man. And I like the fact that a lot of people are walking around with mohawks, because I was punk rock around the same time that I was watching this, so I was like, this is my show right here.
Well, another thing is that it eventually becomes a comic book, and I always have a lot of respect for when they do things like, well, you know, Harley Quinn, she was on the animated series first or something like that, and then she becomes a comic book character. It shows that the writers put a lot of thought into making their stuff stick around.
Yeah, it's awesome. And I did read the Rebirth, Batman Beyond, and it was written by Dan Jurgens, and it was really good. I mean, it's still ongoing, but I kind of fell off of it a little bit. But you got to appreciate the source material, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think I've got that one sitting in my long box somewhere.
Okay, number two for me. I would make this my number one possibly, but I don't want to take Joey out. I think it's unfair. So I'll leave my number one, because I'm pretty sure it's going to match up with Joey's number one too. But my number two has to be the Arkhamverse. Arkham Asylum, Batman, the Arkham games. Ridiculously. Hands down, they definitely encompass what Batman is. They took the fighting to another level, which even influenced the movie. Obviously, Zack Snyder saw the game footage and was like, oh, that's how Batman needs to fight. And it just has the essence of the old animated series Batman laid on top of it. So it like hits every marker as far as what Batman represents. And I'm just confused as to why they wouldn't put a movie out that just followed that storyline. The game was awesome.
That's for sure. I played all of those. They were great. And you're right. I didn't even think about it till now. The fighting in Batman versus Superman is right out of those games. Right out. And I loved, in the games with the cape, gliding with the cape. That was awesome.
Yeah, no, to me, they definitely just stepped up what Batman could be. Kind of like how Nolan went back and, made it very realistic to take on Batman. I think the video games took kind of like the animated version and just updated it and made it mesh, and it just worked out very, very well.
That's cool. My wife doesn't let me play violent video games. So I wasn't, okay. I'm not too familiar with that. So, hey man, I've got little kids walking around.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It wouldn't be good to play, but you're going to have to check out like some cutscenes on YouTube or something like that.
I definitely will. Bill, you're up.
Okay, my number two would be Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
Good pick.
And if you remember these show, the best Justice League interpretation there's been, really, in my opinion. Batman was done perfect. There were a lot of episodes, I wasn't growing up in the 90s watching Batman the Animated Series. I didn't watch it till later. This was the show that got me excited about Batman in animation. What did you all think of this series? Did you watch the series?
I didn't get a chance to. I seen a couple episodes. But again, it's definitely an extension of the Batman the Animated Series universe.
I did watch it a handful of times. When they pulled this one out, I was excited that they had something very similar to Batman the Animated Series, but with Superman, because I was watching those really cool movies too with Superman. And I was excited. Dude, one of my favorite movies besides, you know, Batman 89 is the Superman movies with Christopher Reeves. And I would, those ones would come out every Saturday, and I was right there glued to the TV watching them. So if I had more Superman, I was excited because I had Batman and Superman right next to each other. It was really fun.
Yeah, I know this is a bad pod, but those Reeves movies, that's just gold.
Right, and they still hold up.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. In comparison to comic book movies that are out there, they definitely hold up. He does things that are kind of outside, like, you know, him time traveling and whatever. But, you know, the origin is still very much so connected to the mythos. And it just, again, it's on point.
And the other thing, it's not sort of Batman related, but the other thing that I really enjoyed when you got to Justice League and Unlimited, you had all these different characters that would show up. They used like every villain in the DC universe and almost every hero in the DC universe. So that was very cool to see. So we on to number one.
Number one. So this is gonna make Bill cringe, because my number one is none other than Batman the Animated Series.
I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman.
What else could it be?
Right? That was...
That doesn't make me cringe. I think I loved it, so it doesn't make me cringe.
All right, I'm glad it doesn't.
It might not be my number one.
But it's my number one.
Again, I would say my Arkhamverse is number one. I didn't want to step on your toes with the animated series, but the animated series inspired the Arkhamverse. It inspired the Justice League. It inspired Batman Beyond. The animated series of Batman is where it started.
Yeah, this was the one that I would race home from school just to catch it, because it was on right after school. And if I was even just a little bit late from leaving school, I would miss it. I was so excited to turn on that TV and watch it. I was watching this one, and then I would watch X-Men that would be coming out as well. And then after that, soon we would have the Superman series coming out too. So I was so excited to watch this one because it started all of that stuff, right? And then it even brought in the movie like Mask of the Phantasm. So cool, right? And they're actually bringing that back out to the theaters. So I'm so excited for these ones, guys. So excited that, you know, that they're bringing that back.
Another thing about the Batman animated series is once you get past the first three seasons, they update all the characters. Robin becomes Nightwing. They bring in Tim Drake. You know, Harley Quinn is from there. They just did so much with that animated series. It was really great and a staple of the time.
Yeah, they do. It was pretty cool. It got better. It got a whole lot better. But I think I have to tell you guys, one of my favorite episodes is that one when they brought out, Gray Ghost.
Definitely. The Gray Ghost episode was cool. I mean, there's so many episodes. That Cyborg episode where they had the Hardak systems. I actually watched it again I think maybe a year or two ago. I watched like the first three seasons. So, there are so many good episodes. It's no wonder that the show won. I know it won an Emmy. I don't know if it won several of them, but it definitely did deservingly so.
So, Nate, what is your number one?
I'm going to leave it at that. We shared it with Batman the Animated Series for all the same obvious reasons.
My number one is, of course, what else could it be but Super Friends?
You know, Robin, quite often people choke on a piece of food they're eating.
Right. What can you do for them?
Well, if I were choking, you'd stand behind me, wrap your arms around my waist, then make a fist with one of your hands and put it against my abdomen with your thumb against my body, slightly below my rib cage. Grab your fist and press in and upward. You might have to press and push up more than once. Try it again. It's important to get it right. Someone's life may depend on it.
That's
Do
awesome.
You all know what Super Friends is? Have you ever heard of this?
Heard of it, never seen it.
Have you ever heard
it.
Of this TV show? Are you serious? Are you kidding me?
Nope.
Are you kidding me?
Are you being serious right now?
I'm being serious. This is what I grew up on. This what came on Saturday mornings. You couldn't wait. You'd see Batman, Superman, the Justice League, the Hall of Justice. We have the Hall of Justice now. It came directly from the series. Yes, it was a little corny. Yes,
Didn't they have the Legion of Doom in there as well?
Yes, the Legion of Doom.
I'll be honest with you, Bill. If you feel that strongly about the Super Friends, you're going to have to see the Lego Batman, because you can't tell me that that's not an updated version of that era of Batman.
Oh, I'm sure it is. You know, they got some of their inspiration from, you know, Batman 66 for that, I'm sure. And the way that Batman was portrayed, he probably said chum a lot. I can't remember on the top of my head, but that would be my number one. And I personally picked ones that connected with me personally. Yes, there's a lot that you can mention. And one of my special mentions that wasn't in my top three, and this might blow one of you away, was the Dark Knight Returns Part 1 and Part 2 movies.
Yeah.
It gave me a greater appreciation to that story. Originally, I did not love that story.
I liked it a lot, too.
But those movies were great. Those movies awesome. Were great.
That's awesome, because for me, it was a reverse effect, but it doesn't matter because Peter Weller was just awesome as Batman. It was so delightful to have a different take, because they typically use, if not the same actors, they'll use actors that kind of sound the same. So Peter Weller was definitely refreshing as an older Batman. And man, that I remember doing a podcast with you, Bill. I remember you saying, like, no, I can't believe that you're pulling that out right now.
Yeah, that one was a fun one. Three other ones I wanted to mention: Year One, and then The Dark Knight Returns Part 1 and 2, and then Under the Red Hood, because we can't forget those ones. Those ones are awesome as well. And we seriously, none of us have even mentioned Mask of the Phantasm. We can't leave this topic alone without bringing those ones into the mix.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Mask of the Phantasm was the same as far as the level, like that's one of the historic ones. And Under the Red Hood was shockingly surprising. Thought it was a better reflection of the comic book than The Dark Knight Returns was.
Oh, man. That opening scene where Joker is just beating Robin, dude. I was watching it the other day, and I threw it on, and my son was in here, and we're watching this. He said, "Dad, this is so violent." I said, "Okay, son, do we need to turn it off?" He says, "I think so."
Well, I'm glad your son monitored your behavior.
Right.
That's what kids are for, right?
He does that quite a bit. But yeah, Year One was so cool because, you know, I really love the comic book as well. And this one, you know, these ones were right out of the pages of the books. You know, I mean, same thing with Dark Knight Returns. You know, I loved that Frank Miller's adaption. So cool. I enjoyed those books. We even got you got Batman versus Superman in that one. You know, that's where they pulled that out, that metal suit from the movie, that they pulled it right out of that book.
Well, Year One, that had the same effect on me that The Dark Knight had on Bill. I read the comic. It was good. But then when I actually seen the movie, it kind of put everything in a better frame of reference. And then when I went back and read the comic, it was just 10 times more awesome than I originally thought. I actually have a story about that. Me, when I was first getting into comics, I fell in love with Year One, and then I met a guy who he just screamed at me that I had never heard or read The Watchmen. I told him I seen the crappy movie and I didn't dig it too much. So I ended up trading him Year One for the Watchmen graphic novel. And it was, we were supposed to borrow, but we never returned it. and it, you know, it just blew my mind because I think he was like, "Oh, I didn't know Batman could be taken seriously like this." And I was like, "What is The Watchmen? Why would anyone like care to read something about the crappy movie?" And then, you know, that just changed my whole comic perspective.
Yeah, the book was definitely better.
That surprises me because you're like Mr. Watchman.
I am Mr. Watchman, but someone had to introduce me to it. In fact, the first time I read The Watchmen, I didn't read the backstories to it, and it was still like meh. I had to read it like three or four times, and then something clicked, and I was like, "Oh my god, this is so much more than just a comic book." Like what this guy did in 12 issues is what it took me like 300 or 400 issues of reading Batman to get the gist of this character. He encompassed a lot within those 12 issues, and you know, I read a lot of Batman to get to where I am today. So
cool.
That's cool. That's very cool. So maybe we'll go ahead and wrap it up here. That was a pretty good, you know, topic to talk about. Yeah, thank you for everybody who voted for that on Twitter, because Joey actually posted that on Twitter, gave several different topics, and that came out to be number one. Of course, if anybody out there has any topics they'd like us to discuss, you can send it to us, tweet us, or email us, and let us know. And we can almost talk about anything, except maybe Batman's appendage.
Yes, sometimes it's off limits.
I think next week or next time that we get together and talk about this, I think we should go with the second one, that the next one that was voted. Which one was that? I think that was the Joker, or do you remember, Bill?
It was Batmobiles.
Oh, okay, then maybe next time we'll talk about our favorite Batmobiles.
That's a hard one in my.
Pretty sure we're gonna have starkly different opinions on not only which one's the best, but why.
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah. That would be cool.
Are we all in agreement there? We're going to talk about Batmobiles next time?
Yeah.
All right, that's cool. Cool. All right, guys, for the Batpod and for Bill and Nate, this is Joey Galvez. I appreciate you guys coming in and listening to the topic of the week. Next time, we're going to be talking about our favorite Batmobiles, and we'll see you guys next time.
All right, stay tuned. Me and Bill are going to be playing some really cool stuff here for you guys next.
Selling Out Show, a podcast about the world we live in, hosted by a couple of guys who screwed up at every turn. Unscripted and raw takes on a variety of topics every time out. You name it, we talk about it and give a unique, thought-provoking perspective. We'll make you laugh, maybe a little livid, as we provide a new look at life for your listening pleasure. Follow us on Twitter at Selling Out Show, and we're available on all major podcast providers. Plus, you can find us on our network, Infirmary Media, by visiting infirmary.org. So what are you waiting for? Try Selling Out Show right now.
I am Gotham.
Hello, guys and gals. Martin here, and welcome to the first installment of, I guess we'll just still call it, I Am Gotham. I Am Gotham used to be a podcast I used to do in which I delved into Batman stories from the Golden Age and how the character has evolved over the decades. And when Bill and Joe started doing the Batpod, I was like, hey, can I just throw some of these segments in here? And they agreed. So this will be the first installment. In fact, it's one that I pre-recorded. I decided to take bits of the first episode of that podcast to kind of do an introduction. And so for this segment, I'll be talking about Detective Comics number 27 from 1939. Of course, the first appearance of Batman. And I hope you enjoy it. As the weeks go on, I'll be doing a couple more episodes. They'll be short, about 10 or 15 minutes, in which I'll dive into some key aspects of the Golden Age. So this one will be the first appearance of Batman. On the next installment, I'll be doing a comparison between Batman and the Shadow, which, of course, the Shadow was instrumental in the creation of the Batman character. And then after that, we'll move on to other things. For example, right now I'm looking at the origin story of Robin. We'll talk about that. And of course, I'm going to try to compare some of these things in the Golden Age to how the character has evolved through the decades until today. I hope you enjoy it. If you want to get more of me, you can, of course, find me on the Comic Talk Today podcast, which I do sometimes 3, 4, 5, even 7 times a week. It depends. And of course, you can find me on Twitter at Geekvine. Let me know what you think, and I hope you enjoy it. So, of course, the first book that I read is Detective Comics number 27 from May 1939. Title of the story is The Case of the Chemical Syndicate. And I just want to give some background for those of you that have never read old Detective Comics. I definitely urge you to do so. And even not like just for the Batman stories, because a lot of these detective books for quite a while until Batman became the focus of them, they were like pretty big books, you know, like 64 page specials, and they came out every month. They had quite a few different stories in here. And yes, they're all detective stories, but they're really in very different genres. Like, you know, there's strict, like, hardcore detective stories. There's like Western detective stories. There's like, Peanuts type stories. It's really fascinating to see. So if you grab a copy of some of these early issues, they are available on Comixology for like a buck a piece. So I highly recommend, if you're a Batman fan, you should pick those up and read them. But if you're just a fan of comics in general and want to see like what kind of stuff is being done at this time, I think it's fascinating to read them for that as well. And all of them have that feel. When you read comics from this era, it's so interesting to see like the seeds being laid for what comes later in comics. But it's so obvious from reading the stories that comics
were a natural evolution from just like newspaper print comics, you know, like whatever you get on the Sunday paper, like Peanuts or I don't even know. I haven't read a newspaper comic in like 30 years, but you know, like those kind of stories. So the stories are much shorter. They resolve very quickly. Like I said, they really feel like a collection of like a few weeks worth of Sunday comic strips. It was so enjoyable. Like, I know I was talking to some folks, some friends of mine, and they were talking about how a lot of this golden age stuff was just kind of very outdated. And yeah, like some of it is kind of outdated. There was so much fun to read. Like I was so amazed. Like I said at the beginning of this podcast, I haven't read everything Batman, but I have read some of these early issues. So like obviously I've read Detective 27 before. What's another one that I read today? Like Detective 31 I've read before. You know, not a whole lot. Like maybe some key issues, like first appearance of Robin, which comes a little bit later. I'll probably discuss that next episode. But I've read some of these big issues before. I don't know if it's like that I've read them so long ago that they just didn't catch me as much. Or maybe I was so eager to do this podcast and like get all that history that they really like resonated with me quite a bit. This time reading them. And I'm so glad we have digital comics. I know this is like always a big thing for comics readers, like print or digital, like print sucks, digital sucks. Neither of them suck, okay? Each have their purpose. Some people prefer digital for certain things. I get it. I used to be a digital only reader, but it's so interesting how they really fill a niche that we wouldn't have had so many years ago. Think about it. How likely are you to find good copy of Detective Comics 27 for a price that you can afford? Like, I'm pretty sure you're more likely to win the lottery and then you could buy a copy of Detective Comics 27, you know? It's so unlikely. And for like a buck, there's no reason why you shouldn't be reading these comics. So anyway, so the first one I read was Detective Comics number 27, The Case of the Chemical Syndicate. Like right away, you're introduced to Bruce and Commissioner Gordon, like in the first panel. And their relationship was really interesting in these first few issues. Because like Bruce Wayne is just always hanging out at Commissioner Gordon's house for some reason. And I guess he just wants to like get the inside scoop on criminal activities. And we see some of that a little bit later as well. I just thought it was so funny that Bruce is just hanging out at Commissioner Gordon's house, like smoking a pipe. You know, this is before computers, right? So there's no Batcave, first of all. If you've never read these, there still is no Batcave. We'll get to that. Batcave, I think probably in, I can't remember if it's next episode or in two episodes, but it'll be pretty soon. Batcave comes much later. And, there are some other interesting differences to what more modern readers might be used to out of Batman. But yeah, so they're hanging out at Commissioner Gordon's house, and Commissioner Gordon gets a call that the Chemical King has been killed. And he is not a villain, just FYI. He's a guy. He runs a company that makes chemicals, hence the Chemical King. You gotta remember, this is during the Great Depression, right? So while there are a lot of broke people, there are also a lot of very smart businessmen who have monopolized a lot of industry, even before, obviously before the year, but you know, like Henry Ford, people like that who were able to consolidate pretty much all manufacturing in one sector. So the Chemical King is kind of like that, except he does have a couple partners. There's Stephen Crane is the Chemical King. There's Paul Rogers and Alfred Stryker. Those three guys run this company, and Crane gets killed. And, Batman goes to investigate. We see Paul Rogers, they go to investigate, and they blame the murder on Lambert, which is, Crane's son. And Lambert informs them how it couldn't be him. He tells him, you know, like, I walked into the room, he had a knife in his back, and that's why my fingerprints are on the knife. But you know, like, my dad was getting death threats. You guys need to investigate. And so as this happens, Paul Rogers, one of the other partners, calls and says, hey, I got a death threat too. You know, like you need to go investigate this other thing. It's not the most elaborate detective story, but it does have the basis for a lot of what Batman stories end up becoming. Like really, this issue reads like a 5-second synopsis of like a Law and Order episode, right? So anyways, Paul Rogers goes to Stryker's house to see what is going on, to make sure that Stryker's okay. And, he gets there and he gets attacked by Jennings, who is Stryker's secretary. He gets like thrown down into the basement. Stryker's like, you know, I'm gonna kill you. I'm gonna gas you and kill you. So that I can have full control of the company. So it turns out that Stryker is the one that had this whole plot devised to kill his partners and become the sole proprietor of, I think it was Apex Chemical Corporation is the name of the company. The name doesn't matter. As Rogers is about to get gassed, Batman jumps in through the skylight, which that was a little confusing. Like, I thought he was thrown in the basement, but, you know, maybe there's skylights in some basements. I have no idea. But this is like a lab kind of place. So Batman jumps in, gets underneath the gas chamber where Paul Rogers is going to get gassed. He takes a handkerchief from somewhere, and I'm assuming maybe from Paul Rogers' pocket, because I'm sure everybody was pimping with their suits and handkerchiefs back then. So he takes a handkerchief and he plugs up the gas nozzle and pulls out a wrench, I'm assuming from his utility belt, and busts the gas chamber open. Paul Rogers and Batman escape from the gas chamber. But of course, it can't be that easy, right? So Stryker is out there. He's waiting for him. Stryker goes and reveals the plot. Okay, so these three guys were partners, and Stryker wanted control of the company. So he was slowly paying off to own the other guy's shares. And so eventually he would own all of Apex Chemical Corporation, but he didn't want to wait and he didn't want to pay all these millions and millions of dollars. So he decided, hey, why am I going to wait? Let me just kill these guys and then I'll own the company. Makes sense to me. So he reveals the plot. Batman decides, you know, to foil him. So Batman's over fighting Jennings, and then he comes over and tries to stop Stryker from killing Paul Rogers. And as he does so, he shoots Batman in the shoulder. But, you know, Batman's a badass, so he just knocks him out with the left hook. Stryker falls over a banister and falls down into a chemical vat or an acid tank. And it's interesting to see how the chemical vat becomes important for another character later on. So whenever we get to that, I'll talk a little bit about that. But it's kind of interesting to see, like, there's little things that happen throughout all of these issues that in relation to the issue don't necessarily mean much. They're just kind of part of the story, but it's cool how down the line some of those elements become more important and even like seeds other characters. Because early on, a lot of these characters are very like one-offs. Everybody in this issue, you pretty much never see again except Commissioner Gordon. And of course, Batman and Bruce Wayne. The next one that I'll be reading, there's a character that has popped in and out of DC history for quite a long time. And we'll end with another character that's been in and out as well. Anyway, so yeah, he falls into the acid tank. The next day, of course, Bruce goes back to Commissioner Gordon's house to chit chat. And Commissioner Gordon tells him the whole story of how the Batman saved the day. So of course, this is first Batman appearance, first Jim Gordon appearance. So if you ever happen to get this in print, you'll probably be a fairly rich person. But at least to have for historical reading purposes, it's very cool. Batman does have purple gloves in this issue. I was looking at the later issues, and it looks like that was gone even by the next issue. And I don't know if that was because these are obviously not originals. I did have an original copy, like a scan of Detective 27, but it's a little difficult to read. Whoever, by the way, whoever owns that copy, they scanned it and shared it to the world, praise be to you. Because that was, it's awesome to see, you know, like you still see the discoloration and the spine cracks and the staples. Like it's very cool. But again, you know, it's a 78 years old. You know, it's a very old comic. So obviously it's not in the best shape and it's kind of hard to read. But if you do get a digital copy, they are all recolored. And, it's kind of jarring, to be honest with you, seeing they're recolored. And I don't know if it would have been like that when these books first came out or not. I'm assuming maybe they would. Although the paper type would be different, right? This would be like a newspaper pulp paper. And not like the glossy stuff that we have now. So maybe that's why the colors seem a little jarring in some respects. Not so much in this issue, but some of the other ones, it's a little bit more obvious. They're just so bright and it feels weird. Maybe because I'm expecting it to look old and decrepit. I don't even know. But yeah, so purple gloves, which, you know, whatever. They don't match the costume, but it doesn't really matter. But overall, like the design is pretty much what we've come to know and love. There's some differences, and all these things like get they evolve pretty quickly. Like the stuff that you can tell looks weird in this Detective 27, they starts getting fixed by Detective 28. By Detective 34, like it really looks like the Batman that we're used to. So over the years, like they've changed the symbol, like maybe the boots are a little bit different, or the gloves are a little bit different, or the color scheme's a little bit different. But overall, I think Batman has looked the same for quite a long time. Don't even talk about like muscle build or anything like that. Like that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about costume design. But in Detective 27, like he's very much looks like a bat. Like the ears are, they are pointy and a little bit long, but they're much lower to the face. It's like they come out of the side of the head, like directly from his ears and not kind of the top of the head, which is what most modern readers would be used to. I watched a Tick recently on Amazon Prime. It wasn't the best Tick, but I have a soft spot in my heart for the Tick. If you've ever seen or read the Tick, the comic, and you know who the Flatermouse is, the costume is a lot more like that. Like it actually looks like a real bat. Except, of course, you know, Batman has the black and blue and not the white that the Flatermouse has. So, very cool to see the evolution of overall costume throughout some of these issues, even if they are just minor tweaks. And again, this is, you know, one story in many in Detective 27.
I hope you enjoyed that dive into Detective Comics number 27. I'll be back in a couple of weeks with another one. I'll be talking about the Batman Shadow Connection. Of course, if you want to get in touch with me, Twitter is the best place, at GeekVine. You can email me, yell@comictalk.today. And now, back to the Batpod.
I am Gotham!
Our next book is Nightwing number 50. You want to take it from here, Joey?
Yes, I could definitely take over from here. Appreciate that. Benjamin Percy is the writer, Travis Moore, Chris Mooneyham, and Klaus Janson all as the artists. Tamara Bond villain Nick Filardi and John Calise on colors. Carlos M. Mangual is the letterer. Chris Mooneyham and Nick Filardi both did a cover. John Boy Myers was on a variant cover. Dave Wagles was the assistant editor, Katie Kubert was the editor, and Jamie S. Rich was the group editor. And as always, we always have to mention that Nightwing was created by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. Nightwing, or Rick, or Gray, just don't call him Dick. Anyway, whatever he's calling himself these days, he is done with crime fighting, and he has taken up being a grade A loser. Drinking, gambling, and fighting for sport. We even see Gray squatting in someone's home. But the one thing he's very sure about is he doesn't want to go back to who he was before the gunshot. He'd rather drive a cab and get into a little trouble and never look back. So what did you think about this one?
Well, it was a very interesting take, that's for sure. I know there's been some complaints about, you know, Nightwing's losing his memory. We've heard that story before. It's same old, same old. I think this is a new take on that, really. He's losing his memory. He don't even know who he was before that you know of. I mean, he has some idea who he was before, but he's starting with a blank slate. It's an interesting story, me at least.
I like the story a lot. You know, in the beginning, we see him in that diner and he's, you know, some guy comes in to try to rob the place and he, you know, I mean, he knows he can fight. So he just sits there and he kind of chills out for a moment. And then he just throws some coffee mugs at the guys and he just takes them out like it's nothing, you know.
It's like an instinct. He didn't realize he had, you know, if you're in that situation, you just have this instinct to do something, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then after you do it, you're like, whoa. You see that in certain movies, you know, where they've lost their memory and then all of a sudden they just kicked a couple bad guys' butts or whatever. And they're like, whoa, I didn't even know where that came from.
It's like muscle memory.
Yeah.
I like this panel where they give you that X-ray panel where it kind of shows you how the bullet penetrated his brain there a little bit. This is pretty crazy. I mean, we talked about it last show where we were talking about, you know, he's not going to come back from this and he's not going to be the same. You know, do you see that here in this book? Is he the same besides the muscle memory?
No, he's not. He's trying to discover who he is. You can tell that by, you know, you said he was squatting at somebody's house. He was going to be a taxi driver.
Yeah, so he can get into some trouble.
And he's like, Barbara Gordon is coming to him saying, you know, we want you back. We need you. And he doesn't want anything to do with her.
Right. And he's like, you know, how many times have I told you this before? You know, I don't remember you. I don't know you. And it's like, come on, man. You got this pretty girl here telling you, we need you. We want you back. You used to call me Babs. You used to be one of my great friends. And now you're just a D-bag, for lack of better words.
Would you say no to Barbara Gordon? Seriously.
Oh, man, right? He'd rather be in a bar drinking with all these smelly guys running around calling him Rick. He doesn't want to be called Dick.
Right, right. I didn't see the Rick coming. I guess it makes sense. I also like the flashback with the Scarecrow. Man, in the Scarecrow, that one scene, you know, it looks like the Scarecrow hung himself and the guy comes resuscitate him. And
right.
He ends up biting his tooth off and giving him fear toxin.
And that's awesome, crazy. Right? That was so cool. Crazy. I love the way that they portrayed Scarecrow here when he's in his Scarecrow garb. It's way stinking cool. Like somebody sewed up his mouth and he sews up all these other people's their mouths and their eyes, and it's pretty gruesome looking. He throws a trident at Batman and Robin, and they both catch it at the same time, and this little contest or whatever, I caught it first.
Yeah. No, and you know, there's another scene in here where Batman is totally obsessed with keeping these old uniforms of the Robins, you know? And I don't know if that's a new... I assume that it's a Dick Grayson's old uniform. Wouldn't you find it weird and Dick comes back as Nightwing and he sees his old Robin costume in a case?
Oh, yeah, man.
Then we get, you know, a little talk between, you know, Barbara Gordon and Batman and Alfred saying he doesn't want to come back and... You know, you see the effects of what Bane's doing in this issue, definitely.
He's getting at all of them, isn't he? This is affecting their whole entire world. I love that panel there, those six panels there where you see Barbara Gordon's face. And each of them, you can see the emotion coming out. As it goes on, you can just see the sadness just come right out of her face each and every time that you look at her. And she eventually takes her little mask off. It's like you lost a family member and you're grieving this family member.
And there's nothing you can do. I mean, what can they really do to bring him back?
Nothing,
he has to go through. Yeah, he has to go through this journey himself.
Yeah. And she says, I'm afraid we've lost him.
And I'm interested to see where the storyline goes because his muscle memory coming back. He can fight. There's going to be some other things coming back. It's probably going to be slow. Truly deep ground. Dick Grayson is Dick Grayson. I mean, lose your memory. You can't change the core of somebody.
Right, right.
I mean, I wouldn't think you'd be able to change the core of the character.
And that's what I kind of feel like he's doing here. He's trying so desperately to change who he is at his core. And, you know, he's doing things that are completely out of his nature. He's going into bars. He's starting fights. He's gambling. You know, he pulls a flask out of his jacket pocket. Imagine, you know, yourself, you know, everything that you would not do right now in this moment. You're trying to change who you are and you do everything opposite of what you're used to because you don't know who you are. You're trying to figure it all out and you're hurting people that you don't even know you're hurting.
Yeah, exactly. So next issue will be really interesting to me. It's one of those, as soon as it comes out, I have to read it.
Yeah.
And Nightwing hasn't really been like that for me.
Oh yeah. So I meant to ask you here, what was up with that feather at the end? I don't know if I kind of grasped that there.
I'm not sure. I don't know of any of the villains that calling card is like a feather or what that is exactly. I'm sure that's going to lead into next issue. But the biggest thing about this book, that this is Benjamin Percy's last issue.
Oh, really?
From my understanding, DC basically said, hey, this is the direction Nightwing is going to go into. And I don't think he was interested in that direction. So his last issue is 50. And then Scott Lobdell is going to become the writer who does Red Hood.
How do you feel about that? Do you think it's going to get better?
I'm okay with that. I don't know if it's going to be better, worse, or what.
Yeah.
I mean, his Red Hood has been good. So
right. Yeah, I kind of hope that we get the same feel.
Yeah, that would be nice if it continued with this kind of, you know, I get some emotion from this. I don't know about you, but when... I almost feel like Batman, you know, and Barbara. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like, this isn't Nightwing. Nightwing doesn't do this. This isn't Dick.
Right, right.
So I get an emotional response from this.
Yeah, I'm a huge Nightwing fan, man. And I was kind of upset. I was like, man, are we seeing the last of Nightwing? I really hope not. I mean, I don't think we are, but that question did arise in my head. It's like, what is going on here? You know, we get that last panel there where he's in, I don't know, is this his own little cave, his little Nightwing cave? And he's looking at his suits inside that glass, and he's popping that lighter, and he lights it up, and then he closes it, and he's like, he's contemplating on whether he should do it. And then finally he does do it, and he walks out, and everything's on fire.
He torches his whole place.
Yeah, and it's like,
yeah, I'm sorry. I would have kept the Nightwing suit with the high collar. I love that look.
The disco Nightwing.
Yeah, I love that look.
Oh man, I think that's the worst one.
Oh, come on.
Oh man, my favorite one is always the red one.
The red one?
Really? Yeah, that was always my favorite.
The New 52.
One. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Send all your mail to batpodpodcast@gmail.com and put in the headline, Joey's crazy.
Hey, man.
Everybody do that.
I loved that one. That one was really cool. I mean, I do like the new school one too, but the red one was pretty tough looking to me. I mean, tougher than the pop collar.
I think I would take that, you know, high collar one. I mean, that's old school, so.
Yeah, and this is a pretty big one because, you know, I think the only reason why it was so big is because we do see him, you know, he's just trying so desperately to not be who he was and what he is at the core. And then he torches the place, man. If he's torching all this, are we going to see a brand new Nightwing suit come out of this
I'm betting we are.
You think so? That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think we are.
I wonder what it's going to be. My vote's for green.
No, green. No, I think it's going to be a similar design from the classic blue.
Yeah.
But who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. It'd be pretty interesting to see.
And if you're a huge Nightwing fan, are you happy with this? Are you happy with this direction? Are you happy with this issue?
I'm not. I just really hope that this is going to be a short-lived kind of thing because I don't want to see Nightwing continue to be a D-bag. I want my Nightwing back, man.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine this would be more than a year. Maybe 6 months. Who knows?
Oh, man, that's too long for me. Give me.
But, you know, it has to be at least 6 months or there's no impact to it.
Yeah, I can see that. You have to see him go in a downward spiral before he can get back up, right? What we see in this one, he's definitely on his way there. He's wanting to fight. He's just got no care in the world. He's facing danger. He's facing death in the face kind of a thing. And that's what he wants, right? He takes this job that, you know, this guy says, you know, if you get this job, you take this cabbie job, you're going to get robbed. And what does he say? He says, I'm counting on it. I'm counting on getting into some trouble. And in that diner in the beginning, you know, the guy puts a gun to his head and he just sits there. It's like, no big deal. I've been shot before. That's nothing to me, basically.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah.
No, I don't have anything else to say about this particular issue.
I mean, I liked it a whole lot. The colors were awesome. The artwork was great. I mean, the story was a doozy, you know, but I think all around it was pretty good. I mean, it's not as big as, you know, when he got shot, but it's still a pretty big one. It's number 50, right? Do you think this number 50 was better than Batman number 50?
Well, it's hard to compare the two because it's not the same thing.
Yeah, right. But the impact.
Still, the impact. Batman 50 had a big impact.
Did it really? It was kind of like one of those womp womp kind of things to me.
No. The thing with Bane at the end?
But you had to, I mean, I guess they kind of did the same thing with this one. At least to me, I think the impact on this one was a little bit
bigger. The biggest thing about this one and Batman 50, you didn't know what the result was going to be.
Right.
You already knew that Dick got shot in the head and solicitations, mm-hmm. of course. You knew that he was going to lose his memory. So you already had a con, but you didn't know how he was going to be. You didn't, you know.
Yeah, I can see your point of view. Well, I think we should just wrap that one up. That was a pretty good issue.
Yep, it was good.
Next up is going to be Stump the Co-Host segment. Can Bill stump me? Stay tuned and find out.
Welcome to the Bat Pod Stump Your Co-Host segment. Listen while Bill tries to stump his co-host. Can he do it? Let's wait and find out.
Welcome to Stump the Co-Host, and we got a good one for you this week. Our last episode, if you remember, Joey got both questions correct somehow. I don't know. I didn't expect it. I know you all didn't expect it. So I said I'd go a little harder, but this isn't really too difficult. He should be able to get this one. And as always, there's cash of prizes at the end. You're going to love it.
All right.
So are you ready?
I'm ready.
So in this episode, we covered Nightwing 50, so our theme is going to be Dick Grayson.
Okay, cool.
Do you know a lot about Dick Grayson?
You know
what color socks he uses in that uniform?
Blue? No, don't. Is this the question?
No, that is not the question.
Okay.
Here's the question. What is the first appearance of Robin, Dick Grayson at Robin, to be specific? Is it A, Batman number one? B, Detective Comics number 38. C, Batman number 12.
Ooh. That is a big one. Let's see. I can't be Batman. Okay. It couldn't have been Batman. Okay, which Detective Comics did you say? I'm sorry.
Detective, it's volume one of Detective Comics, number 38. And the other two is Batman number one, volume one, and Batman number 12, volume one.
I remember seeing him on the cover of a Detective Comics book. I do not remember him seeing on a Batman, so I'm going to say Detective.
Your answer is Detective 38, and that would be correct. Robin's first appearance was Detective Comics number 38 from April 1940. Pretty good. You kind of talked yourself into that one. I'm going to have to go harder with these. Seriously, I'm giving you some easy ones here. Got another one here for you. We just have one more. And the question is, what is the first appearance of Nightwing? We got A, Tales of the Teen Titans number 44, B, New Titans number 1, or C, New Teen Titans number 22.
Ooh. I think I want to say A. I think I'm going to go with A.
A, are you sure about that?
Final answer.
Okay. Nightwing's first appearance was Tales of the Teen Titans number 44 from 1984. You would be correct. 2 for 2. Okay.
Nice.
We're done with the cheesecake questions. Next episode, we're going really hard. No. These are questions you should know as a host of the Bat Pod, you know? You should know this stuff.
All right.
Would you like to find out what you've won?
I do.
Okay. This comes directly from the Bat Cave. The exact one from the Bat Cave. You have won a Bat Bidet. Yes. A Bat Bidet with wings on it. So anytime you need to, you know, clean yourself up a little bit, you got the official Bat Bidet from the Bat Cave. It's on loan. We have to give it back because Batman didn't want to give it up. I had to convince him a little bit to give that up. But how excited are you about that?
Oh, I'm going to be squeaky clean.
You are. That reminds me. I saw a clip from something on Twitter this week, and it actually gave me that idea. And I can't remember. I'll post it. But basically, what I saw is somebody had a picture of a urinal in the Batcave, and it's shaped like Batman and has the Joker's face in the bottom of it. So it kind of gave me that idea. So pretty cool. Next time we're going to go harder.
All right.
You need to man up. Keep that Batman card.
All right. Sounds good.
Our next issue is Detective Comics number 989. Your writer is James Robinson. Your art is Steven Segovia. Colors are Ivan Placencia. Variant cover, Mark Brooks. Assistant editor, Dave Wagos. Your editor is Chris Conroy, and your group editor is Jamie S. Rich. And in this issue, the mystery continues. We have stolen identities, two guns, two fireflies, two Tweedles, and it all leaves to Two-Face with a lot of unanswered questions. And that was my biggest thing out. This issue didn't solve anything from last issue, you know, with Cobra, because we don't see Cobra at all.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot of questions is, what is going on here? Do you have any idea? Can you piece it together for us?
No, I wish I could. This one took a whole lot of pages just to give you that it was Two-Face behind it all. So it was,
well, unless you looked at the cover.
Oh. Yeah, right. But which gave it all away.
But there was that one scene where the two fireflies are talking, and they're discussing if they're on the level of the other bat villains, and they're listing all these bat villains.
Right.
And they don't mention Two-Face. They mention the person that hired them, but they don't mention Two-Face. But some of the people in there is like, there was one person I didn't know at all. I had to look up, and that was Zeiss.
Oh, yeah.
Z-E-I-S-S. I didn't even know who that was.
You want to tell us about him?
No, because I didn't research anything.
I'm sorry for putting you on the spot there.
It was an entertaining issue. I mean, I'm enjoying this. You get some, you know, background into Firefly. And he thinks he's like the best villain out there.
He was pretty clever, you know. He's like, he kind of knew that Batman was going to show up. It was like he set it all up. He's just sitting there waiting. He's tinkering with that new weapon that he's got going on there, talking to his protege and kind of teaching her the ropes a little bit. Pretty cool, pretty clever, you know, but still, did you really need all these pages to set this up?
Probably not. I mean, I don't know how big of an arc this is. But yeah, there was a lot of characterization into these fireflies that maybe you didn't need all those pages. I tell you what, the male firefly, he gets taken out pretty easy.
Right.
From what I can tell. I mean, he just gets sprayed with some kind of something. I don't know if it's water or some kind of flame retardant.
He says, I improve my fire suppressant, he says.
I guess not enough. And I know we see two of your favorite villains of all time in here. Tweedledee and Tweedledum.
I thought that was so funny when I saw that. What did you think when you see these guys?
Yeah, I thought that was amazing.
I was pretty excited. I thought we were going to see Mad Hatter in here. Because I got to tell you, Mad Hatter was one of my favorite villains in the animated series. And I loved it, seeing him there. And I loved those storylines. And when I saw these guys, I kind of got excited a little bit.
Yeah, it was kind of cool. I love seeing all the bad villains anytime somebody shows up. We still have no idea what's going on. That we get no clues to anything. As I said earlier, we get Batman and Two-Face. And Two-Face, as a cliffhanger, mentions that it's Jim Gordon's fault, whatever this.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I don't think Batman really knows what's going on either. Because in the beginning, he says, this one stumped me. This one, I really don't know. You know, even Alfred said, aren't you going to tell me the answer now? Because this is the way you usually do it.
Oh, right. Because we basically have the character that had died previously. He took over somebody else's identity.
Yep.
They had died years previously.
And Batman stumped.
And Batman stumped. And Cobra, we saw Cobra at the end of last issue.
Mm-hmm.
We get no Cobra. I liked what we had in here, but I was hoping to get a little piece of something.
But we don't. We just see the game that Two-Face was playing, you know?
And what is that exactly?
Right. Just getting two by two. That's all he was doing. I mean, I don't know what he's getting at here.
How does Cobra come in?
When are they going to come in?
I don't know. The guy that, the victim who got shot by the two guns that, you know, that secret room that Batman found
yeah.
in last issue. He's a terrorist, that designs terrorist actions for other terrorists.
Yeah.
Sort of like calculator plans, you know, crimes mm-hmm. for other villains. Or that's sort yeah. of how they explained it. I don't know if that's exactly.
You get a little bit of answers, but is it the answers that you were wanting?
Probably not, but I'm definitely interested to see where this goes because I want to see, you know, all the pieces connect together. I like to see that. I like to see, you know, a good mystery with the pieces connecting together. Hopefully we get that by the end.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because he doesn't,
yeah.
my understanding, he doesn't have only like a few more issues, like three or four at the most, maybe, because mm-hmm. then we get somebody new taken over. Peter Tomasi is taken over, detective to lead into Detective 1000.
Yeah, you know, like you he was on Action 1000. He's going to be on this one when it comes up to 1000, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that is cool. It would be interesting if they do Detective 1000 like they did Action Comics 1000 with all these different writers and artists.
Almost like an anthology kind of a thing.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
A couple things I wanted to note in this particular issue. The one Batmobile that he takes out, you know, almost looks like one of the early Tim Burton movie Batmobiles.
Oh, yeah.
But the front of it has that, like, cowl on it that we've seen yeah. on other Batmobiles.
Uh-huh.
So that was kind of neat looking.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool looking Batmobile, though.
Yeah, that was. I did like that one. And the one funny part with Jim Gordon, Batman, talking back and forth that he needs to turn off the bat signal because they're getting on him about the electricity. The electric bill.
Yeah. That was pretty funny.
Was he have that on all the time?
I know,
it's
right?
Gotham, so he must have that on a lot. No, overall, I enjoyed this issue. It wasn't exactly what I wanted, but, you know, I'm interested to continue on.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I mean, I enjoyed it. Even though I think that there was a little too many pages of the Fireflies, but
and you got to Two-Face, and you really wanted to know what his involvement is here.
Right.
The Fireflies, are they the murderers? But it was happening with two guns. Guns is not their MO. So, yeah. And how is this all related to Cobra?
Yeah. I wonder.
And how is this Jim Gordon's fault?
They're just stringing us along. And I want to know what's going on. But at the same time, do you still think, like, after we find out that it's Two-Face, do we still need to know about the two-gun thing? I mean, obviously to get the answers, but if he set that up, shouldn't we have known here? So that's that thing is, like, who did it? There's somebody else bigger at play here.
I enjoyed what was in this issue, but I don't think it was a great second issue of this arc. It didn't give you any pieces. When all the issues are out and the storyline is out, read it all together,
mm-hmm.
it might read better.
Maybe, yeah. They're doing a lot of that lately.
Yeah. That was Detective Comics 989, so we are looking forward to the next issue, so it'll be interesting how this pans out.
Let's go ahead and move on to our character spotlight.
Yes, I'm looking forward to this one.
This one's a cool one.
This is the Bat Pod.
So tonight on our character spotlight, we're going to be looking into Victor Zsasz. Do you remember that guy?
Oh, yes. Shadow of the Bat.
Yeah. Great, right? So he was created by Alan Grant and drawn by Norm Breyfogle. And we recently lost Norm Breyfogle in, I believe it was in September. This is kind of a little mini tribute to him here in this episode because we're going to be looking into Victor Zsasz here.
Yeah, and our next mini episode, we're going to have a Norm Breyfogle tribute. So you all can look forward to that, of what our thoughts are about this creator that meant so much to Batman.
Yeah, it's going to be a pretty cool episode. So his first appearance, like you said, was in Shadow of the Bat number one. In 1992 as a part of the Batman Last Arkham arc. His origin story was told in Batman Chronicles number 3 in 1996, and both stories were written and drawn by Alan Grant and Norm Breyfogle. Victor Zsasz is a sadistic serial killer who carves a tally mark on himself for each of his victims that he kills. This is kind of a little cool little tidbit here. Alan Grant got the name Zsasz from a psychiatrist. His name was Thomas Zsasz, and he saw the name in a library one day, and he said, this would kind of be a cool name to use as on one of the characters that I'm using. Did you know that about Victor Zsasz?
No, I didn't know that at all. That's kind of interesting.
It was a pretty cool tidbit.
You hear that a lot about creators, that they got names from certain people that they used, and that's mm-hmm. always cool to hear.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'd be too excited if you're the psychiatrist, but that you're a
right.
serial killer that marks himself every time he kills somebody.
Right, right. And I want to know what Alan Grant was doing in the library, you know what I mean? And what he was looking at to come across this psychiatrist's name. So,
yeah, exactly.
Victor Zsasz was the head of his own international company, and he had amassed a large personal fortune. But at the age of 25, his parents died in a boating accident, sending him into a deep, deep depression. He turned to gambling, losing his money in competitions around the world. And one night in the Iceberg Lounge, he gambled everything away he owned and losing it all to the house. After that, you know, he was already in a deep depression, right? So this put him into a deeper depression. While attempting to commit suicide by jumping off the Gotham Bridge, a homeless man tried to assault Zsasz with a knife. Zsasz refused to give him money. Instinctively, Zsasz grabbed the knife, and in that moment, Zsasz had this light bulb go off in his own head, and he saw life as a meaningless waste. He then proceeded to stab the man to death as a gift for saving his life and liberating him. About this time when I would listen to this, I would not like to be that Thomas Zsasz guy. This is what my legacy is, you know?
Yeah, that's pretty messed up.
It's like, what are they using my name for? From that point on, Zsasz dedicated his life to liberating others from their pointless existence. Zsasz went on to appear in many different books. There's so many. I would love to talk about them all, but I don't think we have enough time. That's how much he appears in these books. He appears in Nightfall, a ton of detective books. He even appears in Cacophony there for a little bit. So it's kind of cool. He even appears in New 52. Since we're in the Rebirth era, let's talk a little bit about that. So in Rebirth, All-Star Batman, Batman and Duke Thomas investigate a series of murders that were linked to Zsasz. In Batman number 26, we see flashbacks to a story arc, The War of Jokes and Riddles, where Zsasz sided with the Riddler in the war against the Joker.
He showed up in Batman Begins, is that correct?
So we're going to be talking about that here in a second, but first let's talk about television. He shows up in Gotham. Did you know that he was in Gotham?
I didn't remember that, no.
So he's that guy. He's the bald guy, and he is played by Anthony Carrigan. He's depicted as a sadistic, remorseless assassin and a hitman who cuts a tally mark all over his body for each person that he kills, a lot like the comic books. And he was the guy who regularly served as an enforcer to the crime lord, Carmine Falcone. And his alliance later on shifts to Oswald Cobblepot, the Penguin. And throughout the series, Zsasz has been hired to carry out hits on the members of the GCPD along with other crime bosses. Now, in film, Victor Zsasz does briefly appear in the 2005 film Batman Begins. He is portrayed by Tim Booth. Zsasz is put on trial for multiple murders by the assistant district attorney Rachel Dawes. He is ultimately sent to Arkham after being deemed psychologically insane by the hospital's administrator, Dr. Jonathan Crane.
Yeah, I mean, Zsasz was only, you only saw him in there briefly, but the portrayal of Jonathan Crane in that movie was awesome.
That actor was so awesome. He was one of my favorite actors. He shows up in the 2008 film, The Dark Knight, again. And this one's a little bit of a smaller part here. He escapes from Arkham during that Ra's al Ghul attack on Gotham City, and he proceeds to attack Rachel alongside other inmates. Victor Zsasz also makes a cameo appearance in a direct-to-video animated film, Batman Assault on Arkham, and he is voiced by Christian Lanz. He takes a woman hostage in an alley where he is surrounded by several police officers before Batman arrives and subdues him. He also appears in many, many different video game adaptions. Too many for me to to talk about, but there are so many, and it's pretty wild how many times this character shows up, and it's pretty cool because, you know, he's continued to show up in so many different things here, and it's almost that little cool little thing that we had these two creators who created just this character, and they made this big, huge backstory, and something that could have probably just been such a small, minute character, they've built him into something huge. That tells you a whole lot about these creators.
Yeah, and how do you feel about Victor Saz? Do you think he's like an A-list villain, or do you think he's like more of a B or C-list?
I'd probably say he's closer to a D-list villain, but because now we have the TV show, we have the movie, and he's been portrayed in all of these different video games, I don't think his ranking from a D-list to an A-list villain has, you know, boosted him. But I think because of all those adaptions, I think this character has become a little bit more greater and more prevalent in the comic book world that it's worth talking about.
Yeah, I would say for me personally, he's probably more of a B-list villain. Okay. I enjoy seeing when he shows up, you know?
Yeah.
And he's not one of those villains that's been around forever.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if he would be in my top 10, but he would probably be in my top 15.
Yeah, he's a pretty cool character, man. He's got a really cool background.
And that initial Shadow of the Bat arc was great. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. They just released the first two trades of Shadow of the Bat, which is pretty cool because that's a series that I loved. There was a lot of those Batman spinoff series that I really enjoyed, but Shadow of the Bat was one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. I think I sent you a picture there, one of my favorite panels there of that book where you got Batman chained up inside that cell.
Oh, yeah.
So yep, that is Victor Zsasz.
Yep, that was a pretty good spotlight. Interesting to know. It's interesting. We've seen to be on, like, villains, but pretty interesting. I know the next spotlight I'm doing, and it's going to be a villain again. It's interesting. I know it's not these top tier villains that everybody knows everything about and all the details and everything, which it's these villains that, you know, you may not see all the time. I'm glad we do this.
Is your next one going to be Zeiss?
No. But it can be yours. I'll pencil you in right now.
All right. When you sent me that, you're like, how about this guy for the topic? And I looked at this guy's picture and I said, what the heck is this? And now I think, you know what? I think I might have to pick that guy now just because we've talked about him a couple of times. I need to know his background now.
For him to be mentioned with all the other, you know, big villains and they just throw him in there. It's like, maybe that's a James Robinson favorite. That's one of his favorite villains.
Maybe. Yeah, because we got Tom King over here talking about King Tut.
Yeah, but at least you know where King Tut, you know, originated from. Well, I just looked it up while we were talking here, and his first appearance wasn't until 2000. It was in Batman 582, and he was created by Ed Brubaker, Scott McDaniel.
Okay.
And I recognize him from his picture, but I don't know how much he's showed up, you know? It looks like War Games is the last time.
His picture does definitely look familiar. Where did I see him? I think I did read that book that he was in.
Yeah, I definitely did.
That makes me wonder if I have that book in my long box, because he looks very familiar. We're talking about Zeiss, guys. That's if you guys don't know what we're saying.
We'll go ahead and wrap up our episode here. If you'd like to be a part of the show, we are on Twitter. The show is @PodBat. And I'm Gotham Knight 13.
And I'm Joey Galvez 84.
And we really wanted to mention a couple tweets we got with her last posting of her last episode. We got a tweet from Professor Frenzy, and he says, terrific episode, guys. Love the current and historical bat coverage. Well done. And we thank you very much for your comment there.
Cool. Thank you. That was awesome.
And another comment we got is Robert Lewis, and he says, got me a bat pod for tonight. So we're excited. We're getting some feedback here. Thank you very much. Keep it coming.
Yeah, thanks, Rob Lewis. You're awesome. Appreciate it.
And just to mention, we are on Facebook, The Bat Pod. We have an email. Send us an email with your feedback or anything you'd like to email us. It's batpodpodcast@gmail.com. We are on iTunes. Think about giving us an iTunes review if you listen to the show. We would really appreciate it. We're on Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. And one last announcement. I almost forgot. We have a voicemail line. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, we'll include it in the show. And that number is 410-449-0650.
That's
so
awesome.
So is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that was pretty, that was it, man. This was a pretty fun episode. We had some really cool elements to it. I liked it.
We had several cool books, good spotlight, and that was a great, you know, topic of the week. You know, the animated Batman appearances. That was a lot of fun, I do have to say.
That was definitely a fun topic.
Yeah, and if we have anybody out there that has, you know, if we miss something, contact us. Tweet us, put it on Facebook, you know, send an email, voicemail, give a voicemail, you know, we'll put it right on the show. What's your favorite animated, you know, appearance of Batman? I'm going to say probably 95% of everybody out there is probably Batman the Animated Series.
Probably. Go check out the website, guys. We are always putting up really cool stuff. This past week, we just got a cool new entry. We got one of our buddies over at Gal Walks Into a Comic Shop is doing some ongoing retro Batman titles for some reviews there. So go and check those out.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, check those out. The website has really come along. We've been technically around for less than a month, and we've really come a long way. We're working really hard, mostly thanks to Joey, and we have some other people that are doing some interesting work for us. So check that out. And that's thebatpod.com.
And as always, we are a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Network. Go check out all the cool shows over there. There's some pretty awesome stuff. Even I subscribe to them, guys. And if I just subscribe to them, you got to subscribe to them.
There you go. So we'll be back with a regular episode in 2 weeks. Same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.